Take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
CannabisRadio.com presents The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hey, this is great, man.
Well, on the earth.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-token lovers of liberty. It is Wednesday, April 6, 2016, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us here for another great show on this hump day episode of the Russ Belville Show. Coming to you live and direct from beautiful Portland, Oregon, with 26th floor on the south waterfront, overlooking the Willamette River. It's a gorgeous day. I'm looking out one side. I can see Mount St. Helens in the distance. I'm looking out the other side. I can see Mount Hood in the distance. Skies are clear. The temperatures are rising. It's a great time to be in Portland, Oregon, and it's a great time to be listening to the Russ Belville Show because we've got a great guest joining us on the show today. Vincent Medizide from the book Humor Rising will be joining us. He is the man who founded MedBox. You may remember MedBox, the medical marijuana vending machines, became a billionaire, lost it, and is now starting over again. He's got a very compelling story, having been born in Iran under the Islamic revolution of the late 70s, immigrating to the United States and rising from rags to riches and now rising again. It's the story of his book, Humor Rising. We'll talk to him in our Reformers Reader. Also coming up on the show, we'll have time for a radical rant about the use of drug testing technologies and driving safety out there, and how we may have to face the unpleasant fact that the marijuana breathalyzer is on its way and we might not be able to stop it. Also coming up on the show, we'll have time for some drug war data mining. We got some interesting results coming from a cardiology presentation that shows marijuana smokers have better survival rates following heart attacks, specifically within the hospital. And we'll discuss those findings in drug war data mining today. Also, in behind the headlines, we'll have time to take a look at a bill in the state of California that was seemingly written specifically for one man to get involved in the marijuana industry, legally speaking. We'll take a look at that controversy in behind the headlines, and that comes right after our cannabis radio news. And in the news today, the Drug Enforcement Administration has indicated it will make a decision on rescheduling cannabis sometime before the end of 2016. We've got medical marijuana failing to advance in Lincoln, Nebraska. In Michigan, a Grand Rapids lawmaker sentenced to jail for possession of marijuana. We'll go to Parachute, Colorado, where leaders there will no longer be facing a recall effort. The soccer star Abby Wambach has admitted to using drugs in her past. That's thanks to her recent arrest right here in Portland, Oregon, for a DUI. And there's a company in Minnesota trying to get people off of opiate prescription painkillers and on to cannabis. We'll bring all that to you, plus more in Hour 2 Toker Talk Radio, coming up in the second hour. I'm Radical Russ. Stick around. We'll be right back after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Earn your PhD in THC monetization with CannabisRadio.com. Don't be late.
Ganjapreneur.com, your guide to the cannabis business world. Ganjapreneur.com is a comprehensive resource for cannabis professionals and entrepreneurs. Download the Ganjapreneur app on your smartphone or tablet to catch up on cannabis industry news, scroll through our daily job listings, and learn about successful cannabis companies, executives, and investors. Ganjapreneur.com, helping Ganjapreneurs grow.
Educator, author, and advocate Dr. Mitch Earlywine is here to tackle the burning issues.
And I'm here to clear up the myths about cannabis and burn them away with science.
CannabisRadio.com presents a no-holds-barred platform that seeks to redefine and revolutionize the entire scope of the cannabis culture while opening the door for more to join the cannabis crusade.
Dr. Kevin Hill.
You can't ignore the fact that, like alcohol, most people who use don't have a problem. So I think that you need to think about policy in that way while educating people properly about marijuana. I think that's the way to go.
Burning Issues, only on CannabisRadio.com.
You're listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belville Show.
Hey, everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
It's time for the Cannabis Radio News. Covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Cannabis Radio News is now available exclusively at CannabisRadio.com. Now your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is Cannabis Radio News.
This is your Cannabis Radio News for Wednesday, April 6, 2016. Washington, D.C. The Drug Enforcement Administration has indicated it will announce its decision on rescheduling cannabis before the end of President Obama's administration. In a letter from the heads of the DEA, the Department of Health and Human Services, and the Office of National Drug Control Policy, the so-called Drug Czar, the DEA has received scientific and medical evidence from HHS and will announce their determination of cannabis's scheduling, quote, in the first half of 2016, end quote. HHS has issued a scheduling recommendation to DEA, but the contents of that recommendation were not revealed. Cannabis is currently a Schedule I drug, alongside heroin and LSD, making scientific and medical research nearly impossible. Rescheduling a drug from Schedule I to Schedule II would help facilitate research and may ease banking and financial restrictions, but it has only happened 5 times in the past, according to the Brookings Institute. Lincoln, Nebraska. Attempts to pass a limited medical marijuana bill in the unicameral Nebraska legislature failed when the legislators could not break a filibuster against the bill. State Senator Tommy Garrett of Bellevue, the sponsor of LB 643, needed 33 votes to end the filibuster by State Senator Matt Williams of Gothenburg. In the end, he got only 30 votes, with 2 senators not voting and 2 senators absent. The bill would have established a program similar to New York and Minnesota, where patients cannot grow their own cannabis and have access only to non-smokable preparations of marijuana. Grand Rapids, Michigan. A former state lawmaker from Grand Rapids caught with marijuana has been sentenced to 45 days in jail. Roy Schmidt apologized Tuesday and asked Kent County Judge Donald Johnston to consider his many years in office. He says he served the public, quote, in the best possible way, end quote. Schmidt pleaded no contest in January, months after police seized 3 pounds of marijuana and 71 plants. Earlier, he had claimed protection under Michigan's medical marijuana law, but the judge says Schmidt knew he had more pot than allowed. Schmidt served on the Grand Rapids City Commission and then in the Michigan House. He was defeated in 2012 after he switched to the Republican Party. Schmidt changed parties just before a filing deadline and tried to have a political novice run against him. Parachute, Colorado. Leaders who voted to allow marijuana businesses in Parachute will get to keep their jobs. Voters rejected a bid to recall the town's mayor and 2 trustees on Tuesday in one of many local elections held around the state. The leader of the recall effort also failed to win election to the Board of Trustees in the town of about 1,000 people between Grand Junction and Glenwood Springs. The town passed a ban on marijuana businesses in 2013, but trustees voted to reverse it last year to try to diversify the economy and increase tax revenue following a decline in natural gas development. Portland, Oregon. Retired soccer star Abby Wambach admitted to once trying cocaine and smoking marijuana some 10 years ago, according to court documents connected to her arrest on a misdemeanor charge of driving under the influence of intoxicants. Wambach, who won a World Cup with the U.S. national team last summer, was arraigned on Tuesday in Multnomah County Circuit Court. She was not present, but her attorney entered a plea of not guilty on her behalf. Officers wrote that Wambach first used marijuana at age 24, and her last use was at age 25. It also states, quote, the defendant tried cocaine at age 25, end quote. She was arrested on Saturday night after running a red light in Portland, Oregon, where she lives, and charged with driving under the influence of intoxicants, alcohol. Minneapolis, Minnesota. A Minnesota medical marijuana company is leading the way in creating an opiate replacement protocol based on medical cannabis products. Dr. Kyle Kingsley, CEO of Vireo Health, announced the development of Freedom, which stands for Flexible Reduction and Expedited Discontinuation of Opioid Medications. The program aims to slowly replace oxycodone, morphine, and other toxic addictive painkillers that have led to over 14,000 overdose deaths annually, according to the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention. Dr. Kingsley told the Duluth News Tribune, quote, as an emergency medical physician, I saw firsthand that opioids are overused, frequently abused, and too often the result of fatal overdoses. We view this protocol and the data that will follow as a first step in combating this public health crisis, end quote. This has been your Cannabis Radio News for Wednesday, April 6, 2016. I'm Russ Belville.
Forwarding the cause of legalization and research of the growing cannabis industry, one podcast at a time. The Cannabis Radio Network.
Dr. Dabber, hurry! Its temperature is shooting past 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's burning up!
I'm afraid for this little guy, it's just too late.
What caused the problem?
Only Dr. Dabber can maintain the perfect temperature for a smooth-tasting, slower burn. This standard vaporizer lost all of its health benefits, sending it up in smoke.
So you're telling me that most vapor pens burn so hot they produce smoke, not vapor?
Correct! Keep away from those standard vaporizer pens and turn to Dr. Dabber. Doctor's orders.
Less heat, more flavor.
It's time.
It's time.
It's time. It's time.
The time has come to end prohibition of marijuana in Vermont.
It's time.
It's time.
It's time for marijuana sales to take place in regulated businesses
and stop taking place in our neighborhoods.
It's time.
It's time.
It's time to create rules for testing and labeling marijuana so that consumers can know what they're getting.
It's time.
It's time.
It's time to stop punishing adults for consuming a product that's less harmful than alcohol.
And spend more time addressing serious crimes.
Prohibition has failed.
It's time for a more sensible approach.
S-241 would end prohibition.
And regulate marijuana in Vermont.
We are ready.
We're ready.
We're ready.
We're ready.
We're ready.
Vermont is ready.
Contact a representative now and ask them to support S-241. It's time to end prohibition and regulate marijuana in Vermont.
The Russ Belville Show, providing dictionaries to drug czars since 2009.
Don't want to spend money on a night out, but don't know what to do other than watching TV or playing video games? Consider playing guitar, bass, banjo, or mandolin. The instrument will give you hours of entertainment with friends with minimal expense. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
The world of cannabis is evolving at a frenetic pace. The Russ Belville Show gets behind the headlines to take a deeper look at breaking news in our Cannabis Focus.
Today in Behind the Headlines, we take a look at a story that has appeared on the Los Angeles Times, and it's referring to a bill that has been introduced in the California legislature. And to set this up, I want to talk a little bit about some of the difficulties that felons have getting involved in the cannabis industry. Most of the states that pass marijuana legalization, in fact, all of them as far as I'm aware, have passed it with certain caveats and limitations as to who can get licenses in the newly legal marijuana business. Now, most of the time, these refer to having a limit on whether or not you've got a felony on your record. Now, the idea behind this is when you're trying to sell legalization at the ballot box, you want to make sure that people see it as being a legit endeavor, as being something non-criminal, and not something that is some sort of trick to allow drug dealers to continue to peddle their wares as they have been.
Now, obviously, when you legalize, drug dealers become legal too. But the point is that they want to avoid the appearance of allowing felons and dangerous people a way into the newly legal marijuana market. So most of these laws, when they're passed, they say if you've got a felony on your record, a past drug felony, within the past 5 years or 2 years or whatever the number is, then you're not qualified to be able to get a license. Now, this is problematic in a general sense because the people who are more likely to have a felony on their record are more likely to be black or Latino just because of the disparate policing inherent in the drug war. So this sets up a de facto situation that makes the marijuana industry, the newly emerging marijuana industry, systemically racist because fewer black people are able to apply for these licenses because they're the ones who got caught when it was illegal. And I've said before how little sense this makes. If the point of legalization is to bring marijuana commerce out of the shadows and tax it and regulate it and make it legal and have these people not be criminals anymore, why in the hell would we want to create a system that bars them from becoming legal? It makes no sense from their point of view of being people that are in a criminal underworld that want to be legit, that want to pay taxes, that want to follow rules. And it makes no sense from the industry's point of view of keeping the best trained, best talents in horticulture and marketing and sales out of the business. It makes no sense from any perspective to do this on a very general scale. So that's the setup. But now let's take a look at this bill. This bill in California has been sponsored by Rob Costa. He's the assemblyman from Oakland, or is he a senator? I forget, but from Oakland. And the bill is a way to deal with these restrictions that were instituted thanks to the new medical marijuana laws that Governor Brown signed recently, the MMRSA. And under these new regulations, it says people that have a drug felony in their background cannot get these licenses. Now, this is where in the story one particular gentleman gets added, and that is Steve D'Angelo. That person is Steve D'Angelo. Now, you know Steve D'Angelo as the founder of Harborside Health Center. He is running the world's largest medical marijuana dispensary there in Oakland. He's also the founder of Steep Hill Labs, one of the leading testing facilities for marijuana in California, and the founder, co-founder of the ArcView Group, which is one of the leading angel investor groups that helps to fund numerous cannabis businesses. So Steve D'Angelo is a big heavy hitter in the marijuana movement specifically, and in California politics generally. And he's got some clout now with all the money and support through Harborside. The other problem, though, is that Steve D'Angelo has a felony record. Steve D'Angelo was busted in, I think, Maryland or a suburb of DC, something like that. But it was busted back in the early 2000s, 2001, I think it was. And he was busted and charged with possession and intent to distribute cocaine and marijuana. Now, the cocaine charges got dropped. I don't know if it was if they did a plea deal to drop them or they were just dropped. But the cocaine charges didn't stick, but the marijuana charges did. He was busted, got convicted of this intent to distribute, the felony level. But he was spared any jail time. He was given like a 5-year suspended sentence and 3 years probation, I think. He had to pay a fine and hasn't gotten in trouble since. But he does have this felony on the record, and because of the MMRSA, that prevents him from getting his license. But now this bill written by this Costa from Oakland creates a very narrow exception that will allow him to get his license. It says that if your offense happened out of state, well, that's Stevie's, and it didn't lead to any jail time, again, Steve D'Angelo, and you are currently licensed by a locality in California, and of course he's got Oakland, San Jose, and San Leandro Harborsides, so he's got those, right? If you fit all three of those criteria, that felony prohibition on getting a license no longer applies to you. Well, that's great for Steve D'Angelo to get a assembly member to write a bill to let him get into the industry, but it doesn't really do anything for all those poor black and Latino people who are busted and can't get into the industry now. All right, well, that sound means that it's 20 after the hour, and now it's time for our 420 break for all our friends in Denver, Colorado. Hope you have yourself a great safety meeting. We're going to take a break, and when we come back in a couple of minutes, we got drug war data mining. We're going to tell you all about a new study on marijuana and heart attacks. Stick around.
There are some who call me Tim.
All right, Tokers and Tokettes, that sound means that it's 20 after, so happy 420 to all our friends in the Mountain Time Zone. Time for us to get to a very important safety briefing as mandated by Union Local 420. I'm Radical Russ, live in Portland, Oregon. Thanks for joining us, and we'll be right back after this 2 minutes worth of sponsor breaks. Stick around.
Next to THC and CBD, you can now add CBR to your cannabis vernacular. CBR as in cannabisradio.com.
The next generation of vaporizers has arrived. Vuber vaporizers are blazing the way with unparalleled technology for oil, concentrate, or dry flower pens. Providing unsurpassed customer service and expert craftsmanship, Vuber vaporizers use cutting-edge technology, providing a power-packed, smoother vapor with a lifetime guarantee. Experience vaporizing the way it was meant to be, the Vuber way.
Chronicling the latest cannabis industry news and headlines.
Well, with four states with tax and regulate and the District of Columbia.
The state of cannabis.
Oh my God, it's refreshing. We have people that generally wouldn't speak on behalf of cannabis for fear of retribution, fear of losing your practices, fear of many of those things, and find ourselves in a place that we finally can.
Bringing you fact-based news and views and keeping listeners on the pulse of what's happening in the industry today. The state of cannabis. On demand anytime, only on cannabisradio.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Christian convictions are under attack as never before.
Okay. Maybe you're high, too.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Promoting the end of adult cannabis prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It's even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more on this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Welcome back, everybody. Today in the Drug War Data Mines, we take a look at a new study that has been revealed at a recent event, actually took place today, with professionals in the field of cardiology. And in this presentation, some interesting data with respect to marijuana consumers. And it's the American College of Cardiology, and they're having their 2016 scientific sessions. And this evidence seems to debunk some of these claims about marijuana and risk of heart attack. Not only does prior marijuana use not seem to affect survival factors after suffering a heart attack, it seems marijuana use may improve post-heart attack survival factors while still in the hospital. Investigators culled data from over 1 million heart attack patients. Over 3,800 of them had reported prior marijuana use. After controlling for confounding variables like age, race, and known heart attack risk factors, the researchers found that the marijuana consumers were no more likely to die or face another heart attack than the marijuana abstinent patients. Dr. Andrew Freeman of Denver's National Jewish Health told Medscape's Heartwire, quote, "We already know that marijuana helps with pain and cataracts. We should be looking deeper into it, just as we should with any drug," end quote. While there were no long-term survival differences between those patients who consumed marijuana and those who didn't, the rates for dying post-heart attack while in the hospital were lower for the marijuana consumers. Risks for shock among marijuana patients was much lower, as were the risks from using an intra-aortic balloon pump during heart surgery on those patients. However, marijuana-using patients did have an increased risk for assisted breathing while in the hospital after a heart attack. Researchers hypothesize there may be some connection to the smoking of marijuana rather than the marijuana itself that may require mechanical ventilation more often. Dr. Freeman said, quote, "This suggests that the theory that the smoke is more damaging is probably the real deal, and we need to be very cautious about that," end quote. The study is limited in that it cannot make claims that marijuana use leads to greater survival rates in hospital for heart attack victims. The study's lead author, medical student Cecilia Johnson Sasso at the University of Colorado, Denver, cautions that there is no causal proof of, quote, "what appears to be prevention from death," end quote. While Johnson Sasso and her team are careful to stress they aren't advocating for marijuana use, they are also optimistic about the medical ramifications of their research, saying, quote, "more basic science and clinical research are definitely needed. We can't yet make recommendations, but I'd say to keep this information in mind as more research is being done," end quote. If other studies replicate these findings, she adds, quote, "further investigation into the possible therapeutic benefit of CB receptor agonists in myocardial infarction may be warranted," end quote. And translating that from medical speak, she's saying that we ought to take a look at how cannabis can help heart attack patients therapeutically. Now, there is some understanding that marijuana use leads to a elevated heart rate as you're using it. But that's way different from a heart attack and the heart attack risk. You'll often hear from prohibitionists that there's an increased heart attack risk from using marijuana, but that risk is associated with the increased heart rate. And that increased heart rate is no greater than running up a flight of stairs or having a good bout of sex. So you know those commercials that say, ask your doctor if your heart is healthy enough for sex. Well, if it is, it's healthy enough for marijuana, folks. And this just confirms what we're finding out time after time when we hear more of these studies coming out. When they try to find a problem with marijuana use and lung cancer, head cancer, neck cancer, COPD, emphysema, and now this one with heart attack, we're finding that the fears are unfounded and there may actually be some protective benefits of cannabis use. We're only going to find out more about this as time goes on and the Schedule 1 restrictions become lifted and more states pass medical cannabis laws and more studies are done. And in 15 years, we will look back at this period in history and kick ourselves for how much medical benefit we left on the table because of this stupid traditional prohibition rooted in racism, hatred, and control. And protection of corporate profits, of course. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll be back with our Reformers Reader segment. Stick around. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
This is The Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Keep your cannabis cravings under control. Feed your mind with CannabisRadio.com.
Great websites today need expert web design and development and need to be e-commerce ready and mobile friendly. But building a marketable and profitable website can be an uphill climb. Ready to make your new website or replace your existing website? Think Orange as the new way to get in the black. Orange Hill Development works with Fortune 500 companies and offer the same top quality development service at a fraction of what other providers charge. Brands like Absolute, Carlsberg, and Nestea trust Orange Hill Development. Find out why you should trust your website with Orange Hill. Contact Orange Hill for a consultation today at orangehilldevelopment.com.
This is Cannabis Facts from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. Supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. In 1937, the second most prescribed medicine, marijuana, was banned. It wasn't about marijuana. The paper, oil, and chemical industries lobbied to end hemp farming. No longer labor-intensive, an acre of hemp produced more quality paper than 4 acres of trees. Plastics and fibers could be produced from a plant. Hemp can even produce 10 times the energy of today's ethanol. As marijuana prohibition ends, many states now allow farmers to again grow hemp. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to process America's hemp crop at hempinc.com.
Russ sent you.
You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com, where we don't change our mind on decriminalization during an election year.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Welcome back, everybody. 32 after the hour. My apologies, but Vincent Medizide will not be available for our Reformer Reader segment today. Not receiving any response back from him. So we bring you this Reformer Reader that we did earlier in the year with another author named Marguerite Arnold. I hope you enjoy.
Russ sent you.
The best weapon you can have in the Prohibition War is your mind. Fill your head with the knowledge you need by checking out this latest entry in the Russ Belville Show's Reformer's Reader.
Welcome back, everyone. 31 after the hour, and today in Reformer's Reader, we're going to be talking about the new book. It's entitled Green, The First 12 Months of Modern American Marijuana Reform. It's a novel memoir by Marguerite Arnold, who joins us today, tonight, from Germany. Marguerite, welcome to the show.
Danke. Hallo, alles. Thank you very much for having me on.
Vielen Dank und guten Abend. Wie viel Uhr ist es?
Es ist spät. It's half past 11.
Ah.
So your German is very good. I have the urge to say Gesundheit after you speak.
It's the remnants of a few brain cells left over from high school sophomore year. I took a semester of German, and I can ask you what time it is, where's the bathroom, how much is the beer, you know, the important things in life.
You bet, and the Germans just love that. It's an incredible country. I really love it.
Well,
really
let's talk a little bit about your voyage to Germany, because I was reading in the introduction to Green, the memoir that you've written here, that you left the United States for Germany partially because of the way that we treat cannabis and the people who use it. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Sure. And I found myself in a boat that many people, I think, are in. I'm Generation X. I'd worked for many years in the United States, and I got sick. And then once I had gotten into a program and I was starting to get better, and I'd finally fought for Marinol, which was difficult. This was 2007, 2008. I started to get better, and then I couldn't get a job. And then I got a job, and I got some money. I thought, I actually was credited for helping to win a federal grant in North Carolina. And they used the fact that I was using, at this point, a Schedule III drug to not pay me, and take a year's worth of my work for free. And I had, that was like the end of a long period of just having to deal with this on a level that I just couldn't deal with anymore. I was starving, and I was very lucky. A family member finally loaned me some money and got me out of the country. And I've been here for 2 years, almost 2 years. And It's just, I'm sorry that I feel this way. I don't want to sound anti-American. It's very positive. I love Germany. But at the same time, I'm very aware of the fact that this is something I gave up, if you want to say that, in the United States. And I moved to a country where it looks like there's going to be real reform next year. And it's, the difference is huge. That said, the reason I wrote the book and the reason I continue to speak out on these issues, and it was very lucky in terms of getting a job to cover the market as a reporter, is because these are issues that a lot of Americans face right now. And I wanted to add my voice to the many that are now pushing forward on reform.
You know, as you observe this happening from afar, as it were, unfolding in Colorado and Washington State, did having that distance provide you with some perspective maybe that we lacked or got too carried away with here in the States?
Well, you know, I hope so. It certainly felt like it was easier to write about it here. It's also a wonderful experience to write about something that the Germans... I mean, first of all, the Germans think it's barbaric that large sections of any population doesn't have health care. That's the perspective here.
Yeah.
The second thing is, you know, obviously it is a very different proposition here. They are considering legalizing it next year for everybody and putting it under national health insurance. It's not that they don't want to, the 2 billion euro in money that's going to bring in from other taxes, but you're not seeing the kinds of silly season, for lack of a better reason, going on in terms of the tax debate and some of the other larger meta debates that are going on in America. And that's one of the reasons why I do hold up Colorado and I do hold up Washington State as, you know, and as I say in the book, it's terrific that these two states have taken the steps that they have. Now we have crossed the border of legalization, though. What does legalization really mean? And how do we go about doing that? And I cite you actually in the book. I call it a novel memoir, but it really is. It's a political book, and it reads kind of like a memoir. I try to put in some humor. But, you know, I mean, one of the things that I think many advocates, yourself included, have talked about, especially over the last year, is some of the sillier political debates that we're now seeing going on to try and parse this decision. You know, in Washington State right now, there really is a proposal to tax everybody who uses THC, including medical users, at 37% at the cash register. That's insane.
Yeah.
That's not what the advocacy movement was about. So that's really why I took this opportunity from a different perspective, from a very pro-legalization perspective, but maybe a little bit, you know, as you said, outside of the American debate, to look at these issues within the meta issue, within the meta, you know, overall uber reform that's going on globally right now. And it really is.
The book is Green, The First 12 Months of Modern American Marijuana Reform. We're speaking with Marguerite Arnold. She is the author. And Marguerite, if people want to get a hold of this book, where can they find it online?
Well, it's really cool. I'm participating in this wonderful ebook program by Smashwords. They're an ebook distributor, so people can either go to Smashwords directly and buy it from them, or they can find it in the Apple Store. It's going to be available in Amazon in about a week. So you can buy it now, actually, at a special discounted price, and for $2.99. And I'll have ongoing discounts and specials, but it will be downloadable as of Monday next week.
It's an excellent read. I got my advanced PDF copy, and I was struck at first by your personal story in the introduction, and then this remarkable timeline that you've laid out that even, you know, I didn't even consider, like, the Treaty of Versailles point that you make at 1917, and how that's one of the turning points in how the nations were dealing with drugs and cannabis and so forth. And also you detail the book is 12 chapters, one for each month of the first year of legalization. And you write how that provided kind of a microcosm of the entire history and the debate had gone on about cannabis. Can you tie that together for us to how the first year of market legalization was a microcosm of the whole marijuana debate in general?
Well, I will try. I mean, as I wanted to write about this for a long time, and it was about June last year that when the silly season opened up on the Hill about DEA funding, that I said, you know, this is a book. And as I sat down to start to write it, there were certain events that had happened during the course of the year that just made it very easy to start to discuss some of these things. So, for example, chapter one is called Rocky Mountain High, and it starts off in January with market start, because that's easy. But I also wanted to show what legalization in Colorado really meant, because I think that that is really the only full legal medical market, medical and recreational market model that is existent and functional in the United States today. No matter what they say in Washington, that is not really a legal market. I mean, the idea of taxing a part of the whole medical aspect and shoving it back into another world is pretty awful. But anyway, so the idea though was to take these ideas, these calendar events that happened, and tie them into the Uber history of reform. So in January, I talk about Colorado, I talk about Market Start, but I also talk about some of the things that a lot of people in the reform movement were talking about as well. Some of the things that Colorado kind of pushed off the table. And then I bring in the other issues, the history behind that. For example, in June, I talk about the politics on the Hill, because that's really when the blowback from the DEA vote happened. So I use actual real events that happened last year within the broader issues of reform. I talk about federal law. I spend a whole chapter. I interviewed some of the leading companies in the space last year, where they're wonderful people. So I spend one whole chapter talking about some of the entrepreneurial issues that all of these companies not only faced, but overcame. And that's what I mean when I talk about, I use actual triggering events of the year to then lift the debate up into the sort of meta level and talk about these broader debates.
We're speaking with Marguerite Arnold. She's the author of Green, The First 12 Months of Modern American Marijuana Reform. And did you, when you were saying that, was it Smash Words or Smash Works?
It's Smash Words.
Words.
It's smashwords.com. They're an ebook distributor, and it makes it really simple. You can upload your manuscript and your cover art, and they distribute to all of the major ebook online sites that most people go and buy books from. So Kobo and Amazon, iTunes. It's an amazing program.
That's fantastic. Now, of course, the other thing that happened in 2014 that's near and dear to my heart was my home state of Oregon, and also Alaska and Washington, D.C. to some extent, passing marijuana legalization. Is there a plan for a follow-up? Because I think 2015 is at least here in Oregon, is one of the most tumultuous years, even so far, that I've been a part of.
I absolutely agree. Actually, it's a series called Green Uber Alles. this year is absolutely going to be momentous, starting with what's going on the Hill today. You know, they've Cory Booker and Rand Paul, along with, you know, the help of Americans for Safe Access, which is an incredible one of the more active and incredible reform groups, have introduced some interesting legislation on the Hill to allow the medical movement to go forward. But to your point, I think that the state model that's in play in Oregon actually has one of the most interesting promises for really, you know, teasing out some of these bigger issues. What is fair to tax the different communities? What is going to be used with a tax, with that tax that tax money gathered? Are local municipalities allowed to add on basically what's, you know, turning into legal graft in many states, starting in Illinois, for example, on the medical community? And those are questions I think that Oregon in particular is extremely well set up to handle. And yes, to answer your question, it is going to be a series, at least through 2016, because I think that this is the most important political litmus test that faces every single national candidate, starting with the two presidential candidates, whoever those are.
Well, now that's an interesting point, and I want to elaborate on that a little bit. You say that, because I claim the same thing. I'm wondering, what's your perspective on why you think this is one of the biggest issues in the campaigns?
Well, first of all, you know, Iowa, the Iowa Board of Pharmacy has just changed the state classification of hemp, at least, to a Schedule II drug.
Yeah.
So, you know, given the impact of the Iowa caucuses and ethanol politics in the state, that is going to be a question that's going to be lobbed at every single presidential candidate once the silly season for presidential, the presidential season really gets underway. Second of all, as I discuss in the book, and I am very, very hard on those people that I suspect are going to be lining up for certainly the national presidential race, and they are right now, because they have been in politics for a long time, and there's absolutely no excuse for what we are still hearing people say. And I'm going to be direct about Hillary Clinton. You know, as I discuss in the book, this is somebody who has been, she's a former first lady. She's a former senator from New York, which has a very large Jewish population. She's a former secretary of state. And she doesn't know that there's all this research that American tax dollars have paid for in Israel. She doesn't know that. On medical cannabis. She wants to delay forward motion in the United States because she thinks that more research, more American research is needed. Why is that? She's not aware of those things? Why not? Why aren't those questions being posed to her in that way as opposed to, say, Christian Amanpour throwing her a softball question about whether she's ever smoked pot? Mm. You know? Sorry. At this point, having watched and been a part of the medical marijuana movement for many, many years, starting with watching many of my gay friends die, I'm tired of it. And I think that at this point, it is definitely the right time to make that statement. And there is an opening, thanks to the work of literally hundreds and thousands of, if not millions of people. This is a bottom-up movement. Let's take it, you know, be the change. And now is the time to make that statement and push it forward.
Oh, so well spoken. Thank you so much, Marguerite Arnold, for writing this book. And just for your personal story, too, is just very compelling. I encourage everyone to go out to smashwords.com and get the book. We've got the link up in our chat room, thanks to Gothic Prophet, who's already ran out and bought a copy for himself. Marguerite, thank you so much for joining us here on the show. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much. And like I said, we're going to be running all sorts of cool discounts and promotions, and get in touch with me. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
That's our pre-recorded interview with Marguerite Arnold. Took place earlier this year. Again, my apologies to Vincent Medizade. We will reschedule him to get him on to talk about his book, Humor Rising, My Journey from Bankruptcy to Billionaire, Back to Aspiring Upstart in the Cannabis Industry. We got to take a break. When we come back, it's time for the Radical Rant. You're just going to have to face it. The marijuana breathalyzer is on its way.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
From dabs to chivas, sativas to indicas, we roll out a whole concentrate of fresh new content every week. It's like going from the greenhouse to the dispensary, CannabisRadio.com.
Ganjapreneur.com, your guide to the cannabis business world. Ganjapreneur.com is a comprehensive resource for cannabis professionals and entrepreneurs. Download the Ganjapreneur app on your smartphone or tablet to catch up on cannabis industry news, scroll through our daily job listings, and learn about successful cannabis companies, executives, and investors. Ganjapreneur.com, helping Ganjapreneurs grow.
Ignite the conversation on some trending topics along the Cannabis Radio social media network. Join our crew of thousands on our Cannabis Radio page on Facebook or at Canna Radio, C-A-N-N-A Radio on Twitter. Plus, look for our Facebook and Google Plus pages for all of our original programs and connect with Dr. Dina, Kyle Cushman, Dr. Mitch Earlywine, Nurse Heather, Doc Rob, the hosts of Ganjapreneur, and more. Connect with the growing Cannabis Radio social crusade at Canna Radio on Twitter or search for Cannabis Radio on Facebook, Google Plus, and Instagram and grow with us.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired-up lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com.
Must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it,
is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
Today in the rant, I'm looking at a report in the Los Angeles Times, and the title of it is Driving While High, Lawmakers Want Police to Be Able to Check. And it addresses a topic that we've covered many times here on the Russ Belville Show, driving while high, or SMOF, stoned mayhem on the freeways. On the one hand, I have for years now been telling you there's little to fear from people that use marijuana and drive. There is no stoned mayhem on the freeways. Marijuana ain't alcohol. It does not impair the body, the mind, or the judgment in the same way alcohol does. Yada, yada, yada. We've covered that many times. This time we're going to cover the more cynical side of the issue, and that is the detection of this non-issue, the policing of this non-problem. Because despite the fact that we're right, and we have science and evidence on our side, that there is nothing to fear from marijuana-using drivers, despite all that, I think we're going to end up losing this battle. I don't want to lose this battle. I'm not giving up on this battle. But I'm telling you, from a rhetorical standpoint, things don't look good. In the story by Patrick McGreevy, he refers to a bill that is being authored by Republican State Senator Bob Huff of San Dimas to mandate a handheld electronic device to test for the presence of marijuana, cocaine, amphetamines, and pain medications, including opiates, with a saliva swab. And Senator Huff said, quote, "Sadly, we've become a nation of self-medicating, careless people. The public is naive in understanding how dangerous our roads are made by people who are abusing opiates, meth, and cannabis," end quote. Well, it is nice that senators are now saying cannabis. That's kind of nice. But what's this? We've become a nation of self-medicating, careless people. We've become. Actually, drug use rates are lower than they used to be. Alcohol fatalities, drunk driving, driving fatalities in general are the lowest they've ever been recorded. So what's this? We've become a nation of self-medicating people. There was far more DUIs in the 70s than there are now. Regardless, I think it's interesting that he brings up the point of abusing opiates, meth, and cannabis all in the same sentence, because they have to put those all together. People just aren't naturally afraid of marijuana, so you have to add marijuana into the drugs category to scare the hell out of everyone. This bill, of course, is backed by the California Police Chiefs Association, the California Narcotics Officers Association, National, probably the Highway Patrol as well. The supporters of this bill, this is Senate Bill 1462, cites a report by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration that found a 22% increase in drug driving arrests between 2007 and 2014. Now, whenever I hear there's been more drug driving arrests, I always have to bring up the parable of the fish, the example of the fish. If on day one you go to the river and you come back with two fish, and on day two you go to the river and you come back with 14 fish, it does not necessarily mean there are more fish in the river. You may have gone on day one with a fishing pole and gone on day two with a net. You may have gone on day one to one fishing hole, gone to day two to a different fishing hole that was better stocked. Okay, so when we say that we're catching more people for drug driving, I believe we just got a bigger net now. We've got cops that are actually looking for these kind of things. I don't think any more people are drugged and driving now than there were before. In fact, probably more people were drugged and driving before. But the problem with this argument is the fact that we've already kind of lost this argument. We already lost this argument when we gave away the point on alcohol and breathalyzers. See, we had a massive problem with drunk driving, and that problem with drunk driving was addressed when we
came up with the breathalyzer, the blood alcohol content situation. See, once we agreed with that, the die was cast because the BAC doesn't tell us whether someone's too impaired to drive a vehicle either. Now, before you go crazy on me on the science, yes, it is far more reliable. Far more reliable to pegging a specific blood alcohol content to impairment. Certainly, somebody who's at a 0.20 BAC is too messed up to drive. Problem is, when you get to lower numbers, there are plenty of people who can drive quite well on a 0.08 BAC, which is the legal drunk driving limit. And a lot of them certainly drive better than sober elderly drivers, for example. So with the alcohol breathalyzer, we instituted in the public's mind this idea that there's a machine that could issue a magic number that would tell the cops you were too impaired to recently drive a vehicle. But really, whether you were too impaired is secondary. The real problem is you didn't wait 2 or 3 hours after drinking to drop that number below the magic number limit. You didn't wait 2 or 3 hours. The case of whether or not you're impaired at the time has become secondary to the per se, which means automatically guilty, the per se statute that says 0.08 means you're impaired. So really now it's not that you're impaired, it's that you're irresponsible. You got behind the wheel too soon after drinking. So now, with legal marijuana, the public and the cops want that magic number machine. And here we are, you know, but it's not scientific, and it doesn't tell you you're really impaired, and some of us are patients, and some of us toke so frequently we develop a tolerance, and we're not really impaired. And, well, yes, that's all true, and we might get some traction with that for a while. Indeed, if you're expecting someone to not smoke pot for 24 to 48 hours before getting behind the wheel, pretty much everybody's going to think that's a little ridiculous. But remember, it's not impairment that they're trying to ferret out, it's irresponsibility. The alcohol breathalyzer makes it so most people have to wait 1 or 2 hours after social drinking. So, what happens when the saliva swab or the marijuana breathalyzer gets perfected to the point where they can predict with accuracy whether you toked in the past hour or two? The argument we have against blood and urine testing is that marijuana hangs out in our system for a long time, way past the point of feeling any impairing effects, and the public's been with us so far on that. But it's also true that immediately after inhaling marijuana smoke, our THC blood readings spike well over 100 nanograms, and science will eventually be able to nail down whether you've recently toked before getting behind the wheel, depending on how you define recently. And when that happens, the argument will be made that we were irresponsible for getting behind the wheel within an hour or so of toking, just as the drinker is irresponsible for getting behind the wheel within an hour or so of drinking. And that forces us into the position of trying to defend getting behind the wheel within an hour or so of toking because we're not really impaired. And that might be true, but it's going to be a hard argument to win, because it's going to appear as if we're promoting irresponsibility. That's all the time we got for Hour 1. Stay tuned for Hour 2. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it.